Geek Bill Radio.
Well, that's our Tron motorcycle Lamborghini music, which means once again it's time for another episode of Geekville Radio. I am your host, Xandrax, a.k.a. Seth, the mayor of Geekville, and we got a pretty fun show here. We are continuing with our Halloween-themed editions of all of the Geekville Radio shows. We'll get to the Halloween part in the second half of the show. We're going to talk some news. We got to talk Marvel, DC, we got some Star Wars, and some video game news as well. And once again, joining me from the nice soft padded cell in South Kakalaki, Crazy Train, Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. If you hear cars go by, I apologize. I am outside. If those of you who haven't heard, the Southeast is recovering from Hurricane Zeta. It blew through here in this part of South Carolina last night, and lots of people's power's out, and there's trees down. And even though we're 2 days away from Halloween as we record this, now the storm's blown out, it feels like the summer because it's about 85 degrees and humid.
In here, I thought they were just letting you have recess at the asylum or something.
As I hear the sirens go off in the distance, I worked the evening last night, and my drive home was interesting this morning. I had to make three detours because of downed trees. But trying to reason with hurricane season, not only a great song by Jimmy Buffett, but just life in the Southeast on the Gulf and Atlantic coast. It is what it is.
This weekend, deep news. This weekend, deep news.
I think the biggest breaking story, at least in my opinion, Deadline reports that Oscar Isaac may be playing Moon Knight. Now, normally when I see maybe or could be or rumored, I don't really tend to dive into stuff like that, but Deadline's a pretty mainstream publication. I don't think they would throw something like that out there if there wasn't some something concrete behind it.
Sure.
And he will, of course, we've been speculating about Moon Knight for months now, really ever since it was announced. I'd heard the Daniel Radcliffe rumors as well.
I kind of like the idea of Oscar Isaac's a little bit better because he's a little older.
Yeah.
And Mark Spector, the character that's the alter ego of Moon Knight, in the comics has always been depicted, I would say, like mid-30s, wouldn't you?
Okay, yeah, so Daniel Radcliffe, I know he might be 30, but...
he's got a baby face on top of that, though.
Right, right. He looks younger than he really is.
Right.
Now, first off, when I heard this, I'm like, Oscar Isaac doing TV? Because I guess technically Disney Plus would still be TV. It's a streaming service, but hey, if they can get Pacino and De Niro to do Netflix, then...
Yep. Well, it's not like he doesn't have a good working relationship with Disney, the parent company.
Right.
He is coming off three times in the Star Wars movies as Poe Dameron.
And what makes this interesting for me is Oscar Isaac, I think he's starting to catch up to Dolph Lundgren with like the number of geek cred franchises he's been a part of. Because he's been in Star Wars. He's going to be in Dune.
Right,
he was Apocalypse in the X-Men movie, and now he's going to be Moon Knight. So not only does he have all these collections on his resume, he's now one of the few actors to have two Marvel roles. Now, technically, they were for different studios, but still.
Right, right.
And really, with Moon Knight, for those that may not be familiar with the character, I think the best way to describe him is he's basically Marvel's Batman, right?
He gets compared to Batman a lot. I think there are similarities in the sense that they're both... smart guys, use a lot of tech and gadgets, and are essentially vigilantes. I think the biggest, there's two major differences. And I think, you know, Moon Knight, I think, is on his fourth run with his own title. So how it is in comics with different writers, they bring a different thing to the character, and the mythos might change a little bit.
And Moon Knight is one of those characters that he's not the first Marvel character that's going to roll off your tongue. He might be the 20th for some characters, unless there's really, like, devout Moon Knight fans.
Which I would count myself as. He was part of that movement in the 70s when Stan was still with us and really hands-on in the day-to-day operations of Marvel, where he just said, to heck with it, we're just going to start putting out titles without the comics code on them because he wanted to bring back horror comics. And you had the Dracula stuff that brought about Blade. Well, you had werewolf stuff that brought about Mark Spector, a.k.a. Moon Knight. So I think, like I said, I think it was on our fourth run of the character with his own title. The major difference between him and Batman, one, is he actually does have powers. His power actually derives from an ancient Egyptian moon god named Khonshu. and thus the name Moon Knight and all the moon imagery in his costume and his weaponry and his gadgets. And depending on which run of the character, his powers will increase or decrease based on the phases of the moon.
So if a full moon is out, then he's at his most
powerful.
He's at, which
it's kind of cool if you think about it. He was originally brought in to be a werewolf hunter.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that's kind of the original. That varies, and I don't know how much. I don't know which one of the writers take they're going to use for the series. There might be a combination of all four. So you never know, right?
Right.
But he does have, depending on the continuity and with the writer, he has some superpowers. He has some super strength, a regeneration ability, not on par with Deadpool or Wolverine, but a small one, more like along the lines of, say, like a Captain America. But the biggest difference, I think, and I've even heard the writer who kind of brought this in, who was the writer on the third run, I'm drawing a blank right now. He's basically Batman with a diagnosed mental disability, which is he legitimately has dissociative disorder or multiple personalities. And much like Batman, you know how Bruce has multiple personas he will take on that allows him to go undercover in the criminal world of Gotham, like Matches Malone, that kind of stuff. Mark Spector has those too, but he really thinks he's that person. Yeah, one of them's a cabbie, which, to go back to our first induction into the lesser known Geek Hall of Fame in the Shadow, we brought up the fact that Lamont Cranston has a actual cabbie as one of the informants to the underworld in his guise as the Shadow. Well, this guy actually plays a cabbie. He actually pretends to be a cabbie to have his ear to the grounds of the streets, so to speak. So
I'm beginning to see why they picked Oscar Isaac, because I can see him pulling all these roles off.
Right, and I was getting ready to say that, is I think, no disrespect to Daniel Radcliffe, I think he's very talented. I have yet to see his stage production of Equus, but I've heard he's wonderful in it. He was good at bringing some depth to his acting ability, I thought, from Horns. But I don't know if he's the seasoned veteran that Oscar Isaacs is to bring these types of multiple personalities to fruition on screen. You're talking some serious acting chops. I will look forward to this. I'm a big Moon Knight fan. I think he's a really cool character. I've been currently playing a really, really old video game that was actually an Xbox, not Xbox 360, Xbox game.
Oh, the big one, the huge one that like fit on your whole desk.
Yes. Yes, I actually played it, I think, on PlayStation 1. So this is like 2004, 2006, this game out called Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
Love
Moon Knight was one of the playable characters. He was so OP'd if you knew how to play him right. By far had the best. Each character has what's called extreme. It's like a super that you charge up and then you unleash it. His was so OP'd. It was called Lunar Eclipse. Oh my gosh. He just threw multiple of his crescent moon shaped boomerangs around, and they would just continually ricochet off all hard surfaces. And every time they hit the bad guy, it was doing damage. And he had another one called Nunchucks, because he is a martial artist expert, where he turns his adamantium staff into a pair of nunchucks. And it did eat up your energy bar, which was the game mechanic you had to use your powers. It ate it up fast, but the more bad guys you hit with it, the faster, more accurate you got with it. So you could literally just melt even boss characters if you knew how to do it right. He was so overpowered.
It makes me want to go back and play that game, because I don't know if he was DLC at the time, but... I think
he might have been like PlayStation exclusive.
Oh, does that make sense? That would make sense, because I played it on Xbox. The main thing I remember is you can go with combinations and such, but when I would play Deadpool, some of the taunts he'd have, like when Deadpool would level up and he'd be like, now I'm better at whatever it is Wolverine does.
Yeah, they all have like little cool little sayings they'll say after they kill a bad guy or beat. Like Moon Knight, I think his is, for you, Khonshu, something Blades is, it's been a slice, that kind of stuff. I can't. Spider-Man had another wisecrack. I can't remember. Wolverine's is sorry about that, bub, or something like that. You know, but yeah, Moon Knight was. If you knew how to play him, he was extremely OP. He was the only download. He was the only non-downloadable character that didn't come with his own separate findable mission, which means he only came with three costumes. Everybody else came with four, and you unlocked their fourth one by getting a gold medal on their standalone mission. And I just loved him, and to the point where if you're a completionist like me and you wanted to level up all the characters all the way, you had to continually do multiple runs through. so that you could find the power-ups that allowed you to max out the character's abilities. I always had Moon Knight. He was always one character in my in every party I used when I would do another playthrough, because he was just so OP. I maxed him out first and then just kept him in the party and would just put three other ones on there that I wanted to build up and just mostly played with him. I think, quite frankly, I got so good with him. And granted, the game is not nearly as good now, as difficult as games would be later. But I literally probably could play the entire game through story mode with just him and beat it. I could even take on boss characters without the other three characters in my party. That's how good I got with Moon Knight, but I digress. Moon Knight's awesome. I'm looking forward to the show.
Moving on, for the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, it's been reported that Joe Manganiello, I always butcher his name, I'm sorry, but Jared Leto and Ben Affleck will reportedly film additional scenes for the Zack Snyder cut. There was a rumor going a while back that Ben Affleck had signed to appear in HBO Max, and I always kind of figured if there was any truth to it, it was a matter of him returning for Justice League. So it looks like those rumors had some merit. So I know that the Snyder cut is supposed to be 4 hours long. They're going to release it in four parts. But it also looks like it's not just going to be additional scenes of what we already got. It's going to be a different feeling movie. Because if I recall correctly, when Zack Snyder stepped back for the issues that he had and they brought Joss Whedon in, Joss basically changed a lot of stuff and made it more lighthearted.
A Joss Whedon movie? He made a Joss Whedon movie.
Yeah, there's definitely Joss Whedon aspects to it. I think it was most evident with how Aquaman was depicted. But
I think it was most evident in the different lens flares that were used. Right. Joss Whedon is much like J.J. Abrams. He has a love of a certain color palette flare, and you're going to see it throughout. You're a director. Your job is to frame that picture on screen a certain way. So, yeah, I get it.
But I take it you'd be interested in seeing what happens, because Joker was not in Justice League at all.
No.
He didn't show up till Suicide Squad.
Right. Right. But he's established in that shared universe. Magdiello has been in that one post-credit scene. He's been established as Deathstroke in this world. So, hey, any Slade Wilson is fine with me for that. I'm a big Deathstroke fan. And I think he has the perfect look for that.
Yes, definitely.
He's already got salt and pepper hair, so you just dye it all gray, and he's legitimately, what, about 6'4", 6'5", and just ripped? So, yeah, he's totally got the look to pull it off.
I do think it's funny. Deathstroke, Oscar Isaac could probably pull it off, too. You put an eye patch on him.
A little too small. But you can always use those forced perspectives to make an actor look taller on screen than he is.
Right.
Deathstroke's a pretty big guy, if you think about it.
Yeah, he's always been drawn as being big. I mean, he's...
Speaking Deathstroke, one of my problems with and then people are going to go, wow, how dare you? One of my problems with Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool is he's a little too big to play Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds is a big guy. And Deadpool is depicted as kind of short in the comics.
I never really noticed, quite frankly. But
Look at him. When he's almost eye-to-eye with Wolverine, and we know Wolverine's not very tall, there you go.
Wolverine's practically a midget. I was one of the biggest Wolverine fans when I was a kid, and he was always drawn as being like 5'3", 5'5".
Yeah, he's like, he literally comes up to the chest of Cyclops. And Scott's what, about 6'1", 6'2"?
I mean, the character's name is Wolverine. The whole idea is Wolverines are small and angry creatures.
Vicious.
If they made the character today, they would have called him Honey Badger.
Yes, exactly. And Deadpool, I've always thought maybe, just if you look at the comedic way that character was created, that was just an homage to the fact that Wolverine was so much shorter than your average hero. They say, well, since he has this love-hate relationship with Wolverine, why don't we make him short, too? I don't think he's 6 feet tall. I've always seen him as about 5'9", 5'10", but maybe that's just me.
I just remember the sight gag. I forget what comic it was in, whether it was DC or Marvel, but it was Deadpool, and he's got, like, forks and spoons sticking out of him, and he's looking at Deathstroke. It's like, hey, wait a minute, hold the phone and the mail. You're me.
That's right. Yeah. Only Deadpool can get away with certain things in comics. No other character can. Maybe Howard the Duck. Maybe he's the only other one, but I digress.
And it's in the real character names. Slade Wilson, Wade Wilson.
That's that. And that was by the creators. Was completely done.
Yeah, that was
Liefeld.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was completely on purpose. Well, if we're going to do a parody of Deathstroke, let's just go all out. So we'll call him Wade Wilson.
Speaking of short, Mattel is producing a remote control Baby Yoda. Remember a few years back, they had the small remote control BB-8s and R2-D2s?
Which I think I called when they announced that. I called it then. This will be the Christmas gift of the year, the It toy, and I think I was right.
Yes, we called BB-8 Soccer Bot and stuff like that. Yes. So,
I thought he was. That's when I first saw him. Truth be told,
right? But it's small, as you'd expect. Probably smaller than Baby Yoda may actually be, but the way he moves is you actually see you can, but you can actually control the movements, like tilting the head and such. So this is going to be probably the biggest thing. And if this is out before Christmas, it's going to clean house in for Christmas gifts. Because
so you're calling now it to be the It toy for whatever Christmas it comes out before.
Absolutely. And I'm given the link from Nerdist in the show notes at geekvilleradio.com. So you can see the video here, and I'm showing it to Train as we speak. And it's just like, you can see just how adorable that is. And if you have cats.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure you're going to have one before all said and done, and you're going to terrorize your cats with it.
Right. And that's the thing is Shadow Cat will want to fight and Logan will jump up to the highest couch he can find.
He is your true scaredy cat, isn't he?
Right. Confirming rumors.
And that
from,
drops what? That drops what?
Let's see when it will be available.
I want to say that. No, I'm talking about the toy. I'm talking about the show itself. The new season.
Oh, Mandalorian?
Starts.
Yeah. As we record on October 29th, the year of our Lord 2020, this is the day before Mandalorian Season 2. So this will probably be out pretty quickly. Although it does report. Nerdist does report that you'll only be able to get this Baby Yoda at the Disney parks and the Disney stores, which I can kind of understand. I would have preferred a wider release because he'd probably sell more. But who knows? There may only be a few. Maybe they only made so many. Maybe they only made so many thousands.
I don't know. If you can only get it from the Disney store, which means you can order it online in this post-COVID pandemic world, isn't that the way everybody's shopping already anyhow? Plus, let's be honest with you, even before all this, I do about 85-90% of my Christmas shopping online now. Anyway, it's just easier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how I do it, too. Speaking of Disney and Lucasfilm, this is confirming rumors from a few months back. They have finally confirmed the development of a Willow TV series. Now, of course, it's also going to be on Disney Plus, and Warwick Davis will reprise the role, although it has been confirmed that this is going to take place several years later. So, and which makes sense because Warwick's in his 40s.
But 30 years ago, 40 years ago, he has aged. He's a dwarf. He's a midget. He's not immortal.
And Warwick has said before that he loved the role. He loved the movie. The entire cast was all little people. So I can see why he'd be excited to do this. And it'll be interesting to see how much of this is going to be CGI, how much of it is going to be practical effects. Will we get Val Kilmer?
Is Ron Howard involved at all in this?
I would be surprised if he doesn't have some sort of hand.
Maybe a producer credit or something?
Right. And who knows? If it's a series, Taika Waititi did episodes of Mandalorian, so.
Right.
So it would not surprise me at all. I'm not expecting it, but it would not surprise me if.
We know he's cool with Disney. He came in and directed or finished up Solo, even though that was it bombed. But
right, and which wasn't his fault. But.
No. And I've always said that Willow was Ron Howard's attempt at doing fantasy. He kind of had touched it a little bit with Splash, but he went in full in. It was essentially his take on Lord of the Rings. Let's be honest.
Yeah, because that really Lord of the Rings, I think, has always been the inspiration for modern fantasy.
Everything's that's ground zero. I had a friend who was a big gamer, but had never read Lord of the Rings growing up, which I didn't understand how a geek could grow up not read Lowe's, but that I digress. And
I have a hardcover copy where it's all of the books in one. So of course it's like a foot tall. So
right.
I do not want to drop it on my foot.
I just thought any geek around our age. It was mandatory reading to have read The Lord of the Rings and The Chronicles of Narnia growing up. But I was obviously wrong, because when those movies came out, the Peter Jackson movies, he went and saw the first one and said, I don't like it. It's too, what was the word he used? Too many stereotypes. And I'm like, dude, Tolkien invented the stereotypes. How do you think the stereotypes came from? And I'm like, you play Dungeons and Dragons. You do realize halflings are hobbits, and they originally called them hobbits, but got threatened with a lawsuit by the estate of Tolkien and had to change it. He's like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, wow. But anyway.
Our last two subjects are going to be based on video games. Tom Holland shared an image of himself as Nathan Drake in the upcoming Uncharted feature film, which hopefully will not get delayed. And when you look at the picture that he had, I think he shared it on his Instagram. Might have been his Twitter. But when you see him in the full outfit, I'm like, okay, I'm sold. Now, granted, I've never played an Uncharted game, but I know the gist of it, how it's kind of Indiana Jones. It's kind of a mix between that and Tomb Raider. And Nathan Drake is a bit of a wise ass in his own right. So you kind of have to have that guy that can pull off the action hero. Really, if they were to do, I know Uncharted didn't exist 30 years ago, but if it did, I'm thinking Bruce Campbell, character like that.
Yeah. And we know from his appearances as Spider-Man, he's able to pull off the cocky kind of a, like you said, like a smart ass, which I have never played those games either. I'm an Xbox guy and they're PlayStation exclusive games, but they are undoubtedly one of the biggest it's one of the biggest franchises of the last 15, 20 years in video games. It's right up there with like Halo and Skyrim and Fallout and some of the other GTA, the more well-known franchises. So
I'll have the link to the sci-fi article that show that will have the picture, but
all I would say I think he looks great at the picture you're showing me right now. He looks the part. I would say to the filmmakers, make sure he has a handler, because we know how bad Tom is about spoiling. Did you notice as time went on and he was more and more ensconced in the MCU, every time they would send Tom on these press junkets to promote one of the new movies that involves Spider-Man, they would send somebody like Benedict or Don Cheadle or somebody like that with them to make sure he didn't give away too much. I remember he got ready to say something. I think it was on Kimmel. It might have been on another late night talk show. And Benedict Cumberbatch gave him this like, how dare you look? Like, oh, I'm sorry. It's like, I think Doctor Strange could use some kind of mind trick on him at that point. Stop.
Now, a game that you're more familiar with, Assassin's Creed, that is getting a Netflix series. And when we were doing our show prep, you mentioned the Assassin's Creed movie, and I'm like, there was a movie?
Yeah, like, Michael Fassbender.
I'm like, I don't remember that.
Because, I mean, to me, that's when you talk Fassbender, we always talk about particular actors, actresses having geek cred. That's one of the ones I put on Michael Fassbender's geek cred. He's done the Prometheus, which is the alien stuff. He's done the X-Men as Magneto, young Magneto, and Assassin's Creed. That's pretty heavy geek cred, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. For me, I think video game properties being adapted to media, I think as a whole, they work better as a series than a movie, because back in the 80s and 90s, when you had games on cartridges or maybe even single CDs, the story could only get so deep, and you could see doing an adaption into a movie. But with as engrossing and involved as stories can get in modern video games, and you have side quests and all that, that's the type of stuff you can't cram into a movie or even multiple movies. So I think it's a good idea to make it a series.
Right. I think that's the elephant in the room. We can't not talk about it. Being our age, the first attempt at the movie video game crossover was the god-awful Mario Brothers. All due respect to Bob Hoskins, rest in peace. He was a great actor. I love John Leguizamo. Yeah, Dennis Hopper, also rest in peace. I love John Leguizamo, but that movie was horrible. I will say this. Dennis Hopper was so over the top. Was the only redeeming quality to that movie. I thought the Saturday morning kid show with Captain Lou Albano as Mario was better than
that.
That
was
movie.
Better, yes.
Yes. And it's just been one after another at attempts to bring popular video game franchises to movie screens, and it just never works. What is that German director's name that specializes in them? They're all horrible.
Udo,
yeah, that's him. And then of course he picks things that are like controversial video games to begin with, like Postal, and tries to turn them into a movie. But I think we've said before, either here or on Examining the Dead, the most successful adaptation is probably the Resident Evil stuff, and that has strayed pretty far from the video games.
I seem to recall the Doom movie being pretty successful, but that had The Rock and Carl Urban in it, so.
No, it bombed too.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah, it bombed too. And it didn't bomb enough that it got like a direct-to-DVD sequel, but it didn't have The Rock and Carl Urban, so it did even worse. But there have been so many that, and I'm trying to think of what's the most recent one. I guess it had been Warcraft. Wasn't that like a year or two ago that bombed?
Yeah. I don't recall that doing very well. It looked like a beautiful CGI movie.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And I do think you could do a heck of a CGI Mario Brothers movie today, because you could do the whole Koopa and Mushroom Kingdom and all that stuff and happy little CGI.
Well, part of the reason I think it plays well into the series concept, for those that aren't familiar, the mythos of Assassin's Creed is strange. What it is it's a fictional timeline from our timeline where the Assassin's Brotherhood, which is a real-life historical group started by Saladin in, I want to say, modern-day Turkey, but I could be wrong, somewhere in the Middle East, Fertile Crescent area, have been in this century-long war with the Knights Templar, of course, which is also a real historical group from our own history, which were Christian knights that were basically financed by the Vatican to protect trade routes from Europe to the Fertile Crescent in the Middle East for pilgrims and for spice trading. They also pretty much created modern day banking because of rates of exchange and stuff at the time. These are two mortal enemies, these two factions in the video game. And the modern take of, it's a very meta series. The modern interpretation of the Knights Templar, which are pretty much cast as the bad guys, is they have a company called Abstergo, which is presented in game as the creator of the video game you're playing. They have discovered a way to essentially tap into an individual's genetic memories based on their ancestry. And they take people into this machine called the Animus, and they're able to extract memories of their ancestors. And that's the bulk of what you're playing, is you're playing from different time periods where you play one of these old assassins, member of the Assassin's Brotherhood. And of course, the reason why they're doing this is there was a society of aliens in the game mythos called Those Who Came Before. And they are the ones who essentially created humanity, and they left pieces of technology hidden all over the earth. And each one of the factions functioning today is trying to find these, they're called pieces of Eden, and find them so they can either prevent the other side from having them or try to figure out how to use them. And so there's a lot of time hopping, but there is an explanation in the series. And that is how each game is set in a different time period. And as time went on, the developers of the game, which is Ubisoft, began to realize the players enjoyed playing the period stuff better than they did the modern stuff. So that became more and more, and as the games went on, they almost completely eliminated the cutscene chapters that were the modern stuff. But and it's just like, they gave you like basically, hey, you're working for this. We're going to put you in the Animus, and then boom, you're right to play in. You're right to play in as an assassin in whatever time period there was. I quit playing the series after, I think, which was Syndicate was the last one I played, which the time period for there is a set of twins. Eternal twins, one female, one male, set in Victorian England. One of the things I do love about the Assassin's Creed, though I don't like some of the social and political bullcrap that they put on there, I do like the fact that when you play in a historical time period, it is fictional history. They have your characters interacting with actual real historical figures. Because like in Syndicate, you interact with like Karl Marx, you interact with Charles Darwin. You interact with Arthur Conan Doyle, Frederick Aberline, who of course was the Scotland Yard inspector who was in charge of the Jack the Ripper investigation. You interact with Queen Victoria herself. My favorite game is actually the one where it casts Templars as the good guys. It's about an assassin turned Templar called Rogue, and it takes place in America and the colonies during the French Indian War, or the Seven Years' War would be the more appropriate term. And you there interact with like a young George Washington and people like this. So that's kind of cool. And because you do all that time hopping, I think it would serve itself better as a series. Does that make sense now that I've kind of explained the history of the game?
Yes, it does. The only one that I have any real memory of was, I forget the name of it, but it was the one that dealt with pirates.
That would be Black Flag. That was the one that came out right before Rogue, my favorite. And it's set during the golden age of pirates in the Caribbean. Once again, you interact with like Blackbeard and real life historical figures in that.
Right. And if I recall correctly, Matt Ryan voices the character that you play. Yeah.
I went back and played it after he had started doing Constantine, because I hear Constantine's voice coming out of Edward Kenway, the character you play. I'm like, wait a second, this is a double take.
Yeah.
But the last two games have kind of changed some of the game mechanics, and I have not played them. And one is called Odyssey, and one is called Origins. And one takes place in ancient Egypt, and the other takes place in ancient Rome. And they try to give like a bit more of an explanation as to this centuries-long war. I just haven't really been attracted to them because I knew they changed the game mechanics, which I liked. And two, how do you have a battle between the Assassin's Brotherhood and the Knights Templar before either one of those factions were truly created in our own history? But that's me. For what it's worth, the newest game, which I do want to play, comes out in two weeks on November 10th, the second Tuesday in November. It's called Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and it is set in Vikings. One of the major game mechanics is parkour. Free running, your character can do that. It's like a skill that assassins have. And so when you think of like New York City right around the time of the American Revolution, which is the setting for Assassin's Creed 3, there's buildings to climb up. When you look at like Assassin's Creed 2 and 3, Assassin's Creed 2, which takes place in Renaissance Italy, in Venice, there's all these tall buildings to climb. They adapted, I thought, well in Assassin's Creed 3 and in Rogue, climbing up trees and through the forests of like the northern United States. Obviously, there's tons of buildings to climb in Victorian era London. I'm going to be interested to see how they adapt that to Viking era Scandinavia. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I don't really think they had skyscrapers.
No. Maybe I'm thinking they adapted the same way they did the forests of like upstate New York in Assassin's Creed 3, where maybe it's a lot of stuff with trees.
I just figured Vikings were too busy conquering other territories to build skyscrapers.
Right. And another interesting thing is one of the things that I like this. I do think the movie did do this well. I think the series will too. The iconic weapon of the assassin is what's called a hidden blade. And it's basically a spring-loaded gauntlet that you wear, on your wrist, that a blade will come out palm side, and they can use these to stealthily kill people. They walk up, stab them real quick.
That triggers something in my brain here because the professional wrestler Will Ospreay, one of his big moves is a spinning chop or spinning elbow that he calls the hidden blade.
That's probably because he's a fan of the game. I will say they're usually rated M. The games are. There are some brutal assassination animations you can do with these hidden blades, because you can dual wield them in some of the later games. Oh, they're brutal, dude. The most brutal actually is probably 3, because the character there is half European descent, half of Native American descent. So he uses a hidden blade in conjunction with like an Indian tomahawk. He has some brutal kills. He has some brutal animations. These are graphically violent, but I think they'll do well. They scientifically don't make any sense. I guess I could see them coming out, but the ability to retract them, I don't see. But it's one of those things that's like, well, how does that happen? Video game, that's why. There's no explanation. So I think they'll do a good job with that in the series as well. And you can't do an Assassin's Creed anything without that, because it is so iconic. Like you said, even a wrestler's calling a movie does that. So there you go.
So it seems like they could do like maybe in an anthology, or maybe episodes dedicated to one time frame and other episodes dedicated to another time frame. That would be expensive, but it sounds like that's something they could do.
And they've already kind of done that in the games, where each game usually has a different time period with a different protagonist as the character you play. The most popular character usually is a guy named Ezio Auditore, who is from Assassin's Creed 2, the Renaissance Italy one. And he was so well beloved, and he is a great character, that there have been multiple games based on him. There's like one that jumps for like 20 years. The first game, he's young when he first becomes an assassin. Then later on, which is called, what is that one called? I can't remember the name of it, but it was like him 20, 30 years later as this grizzled veteran who is at his deathbed now and his last mission. So they've done that already. He's very, very popular amongst the fan base. he is probably the one I would go with first, just me. He's not the first. The first protagonist is, oh shoot, what is his name? But he's from medieval Persia. Oh shoot, what is his name? Ibn al-Hahim. That's it. And maybe they start with that, and maybe they just follow the games chronologically. Maybe they just do one season each with each one of the assassins in that time frame.
Like American Horror Story or something.
Right, right. So you're gonna that would mean, just off the top of my head, I think it would mean like medieval Middle East, and then Renaissance Italy, and then the next one would be American Revolution. And then they actually went backwards in the game, but you could put these in front of them if you want to go chronologically. And the Golden Age of Pirates, French Indian War, and then the French Revolution is Unity. And then maybe they start with Origins, which is the one from ancient Egyptians. So even though release wise, it's 2 games ago, it chronologically would be the oldest. So I don't know. Maybe they cover multiple time periods in one season. I don't know. I'm just saying, if I was a showrunner, I'd pick out one popular protagonist from the game. It's one time period, and do a season with them, and then move on to the next one. You know,
that makes sense. I was going to check out this series anyway, but from what you've just told me, now I'm really interested in seeing it.
it's one of my favorite video games. I think, like Uncharted, it is one of those franchises that is just extremely popular, and you cannot undersell its popularity and importance to the video gaming culture of the last 15 years or so. It is a very successful franchise. As a matter of fact, much like Uncharted, which was developed by the game studio Naughty Dog, that's like their only big hit. Ubisoft has some other hits, but this is by and far what Ubisoft is known for. Much like we talk a lot about Red Dead Redemption, that's Rockstar. Well, they have two. They have GTA and Red Dead Redemption. So they have two franchises. Yeah, Bethesda does Fallout and Skyrim. So they have two huge franchises. This only has one. Ubisoft just, it's one hell of a franchise to hang your hat on, because it makes a lot of money, but it's not much in diversity in the way of the developer. And I think, I would think they would definitely have to have something involved with the production of this. Usually when video game adaptations are made, there's more than just a sign off by the development studio to use that intellectual property. Aren't they usually involved at some production credit level or something?
I would believe so, because everybody seems to like The Witcher. And isn't that also based off video games?
Yeah, but the video games are based off books. So I think that's more of a tie-in by the writer, whose name escapes me right now. But yes. And there's a great example of a series doing really well, a TV series, as opposed to a movie. Doesn't hurt that they cast Henry Cavill, but I'm just saying.
I knew that Henry Cavill was going to be a great Superman when in Man of Steel, when he just walked up out of the water, of course, bare-chested and all that, and you could just hear the rows behind me, back when we could go to things called movie theaters, and you could just kind of hear the women. But anyway.
As we would say here in the South, ooh, clutch the pearls, right? Well, of course, it's Zack Snyder, so you have to have the Jesus imagery of Superman walking on water, but I digress.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and whenever we come back, we're going to dive into our Halloween part of the show, which we will review Happy Halloween Scooby-Doo, which is the latest video release in the Scooby-Doo franchise. This is Geekville Radio, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking for a gaming-themed podcast? Then check out You Just Got Frag. Join host Jared Aubrey and his panel of gaming enthusiasts as they discuss news and accomplishments in the gaming world, and, of course, the gripe of the week. That's all at YouGustGotFrag.com, part of the Wrestling Brethren podcast family.
Attention all Time Lords and ladies. Geekville Radio presents Examining the Doctor, and everybody's favorite Time Lord, the Doctor. Join Mark and Seth as they bring their signature blend of knowledge to favorite and not-so-favorite episodes of Doctor. From Hartnell to Capaldi, Examining the Doctor provides episode commentaries for classic and current Doctor Who fans alike. Examining the Doctor, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at GeekvilleRadio.com.
All right, we're back, and quick, cheap plug for the obligatory Doctor Who reference for every show. Mark Short and I reunited to do the first episode of The Macro Terror, and that also kind of ties into our Halloween-themed episodes, because giant crabs aren't exactly the first thing I'd think of when it comes to Halloween, but it is a monster, and monsters definitely fit with Halloween.
You still need to update that spot, because Capaldi's not the most correct.
Right, yeah.
But and what do I know? I'm not a Whovian. Ladies and gentlemen, ignore me.
And we actually did do the first Jodie Whittaker story, so that kind of makes it even
more
so.
How are you liking? I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent here, but how are you liking her? I'm not a Whovian, so I don't have a dog in this fight.
I like her, but there's a whole kind of social commentary thing going on with the show right now that I think you can kind of guess where that's
Isn't
going.
Isn't that kind of going on in all of entertainment right now? So you just go. It is what it is.
Right, right. And obviously, we don't want to get on that tangent because we don't want to go there. But.
No.
So. Happy Halloween, Scooby-Doo. This is not to be confused with Scoob, which was supposed to be a theatrical release until the plague hit. This is a direct-to-video release that is available on DVD or Blu-ray, and it's currently streaming on major platforms. You can get it on Amazon Prime and such. And as the name implies, it's Halloween-themed, it's horror, it is PG, it's kid-friendly, but it's Scooby-Doo. And we did a pretty extensive tribute to Scooby-Doo last year on our nostalgia trip. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely recommend anybody listening who's a Scooby-Doo fan to go listen to that show because we cover a lot of ground in that. Now,
oh, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Now, we're not going to go too heavy into spoilers, I think, but I'm going to wave the spoiler flag anyway.
Okay.
Now, one of the things I really liked about this is... They did a lot. They reunited a lot of the major cast. Frank Welker is back as Fred. Matthew Lillard is Shaggy. And the fact that Matthew Lillard didn't play Shaggy in the Scoob movie, it kind of frosts me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Gray Griffin as Daphne. So it was a lot of the familiar voices. So I really think this fit Scooby-Doo very well, at least as far as a 21st century take on it. What do you think?
I agree with your assessment there. Doesn't mean that I liked it that much because that's not my favorite take on Scooby-Doo, but it is where they have taken the franchise, so it is what it is. I did not like, what is the name of the actress who voiced Velma?
Oh, the name escapes me. They really gave Velma a lot of
This is very
time.
Velma-centric. Yeah, it's
right.
Very Velma-centric.
It's like they had her driving the van and such, mm-hmm. and it's like... Elvira is in the movie and Daphne's right. Doing all this stuff. And Elvira says, oh, well, you're just a real Mary Sue. And I'm just like, no, actually Velma's the Mary Sue in this movie.
Right. Right. And I like the actress. I cannot think of her name. I could see her face. She's the one who played the Rufus role in the recent third Bill and Ted Adventure. She played the role that George Carlin mm-hmm. filled for the first two movies.
Right.
And I like her. I just didn't like her take on Velma. And part of that is I thought Mindy Kaling was perfect. When I would hear Mindy Kaling voice Velma, I didn't see Mindy Kaling's face in my head. When I heard her voice Velma, I kept seeing her face in my head. That's not good when you're watching an animated movie. You want to be able to suspend disbelief to where you believe that voice is coming out of the animated character. And I had a difficulty with that.
I can understand that, yeah.
But that was either here or there. But it was very – I'm a huge Velma fan for what it's worth. I think the Velma-Daphne argument for guys is about as long running as the Ginger Marianne argument, and it will never be settled. So in the great Daphne versus Velma feud, I'm team Velma. Just say it.
Now there were a lot of horror Easter eggs in this movie. From what I saw, I don't know if you noticed any others. Christine has a cameo where bad guys are yep. driving that. You actually, if you look closely, one of the villains is driving the car, as in the car in the movie we reviewed
right.
in Examine the Dead a while back. And,
go ahead.
And the scene where Shaggy and Scooby like see the pumpkins evolving or the pumpkins turning into monsters, that 100% is John Carpenter music that was playing there, right?
Oh, yeah. Total 80s synth pop horror soundtrack movie music. There was also there's a Halloween parade going on. That's the beginning mm-hmm. of the movie. One of the floats was a recreation of the mansion from the beginning opening credits of the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Which is, I believe, episode 3 of season 1, or episode 4 maybe of season 1.
Which would have been Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Yeah.
Exactly. So that was an homage to that.
There was a big skull float, too, that looked familiar.
The director of this movie was also the director of the old Nickelodeon show, The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. I don't know if you were familiar with that show.
I've heard of the show, but I haven't seen it.
Love it. Love it. My daughter, she loved it as a kid. It's about a girl who is extremely sarcastic and a bit maudlin, and her kind of derpy brother who is eternally hopeful. And they wind up beating Death, the Grim Reaper, in a game when he shows up to take somebody's soul, and he basically becomes like their buddy. And that is the Grim of the Grim Adventures. And it's hilarious because he's voiced by a Rastafarian sounding actor. So the Grim Reaper sounds like he's a Jamaican. But the director from that show, the showrunner for that show, was the director of this. And I think that Big Skull was their homage to the Grim Reaper from Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. You know? Okay,
that makes sense.
I did notice that. That was definitely in there. And it does have a vibe at certain times to Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, but it doesn't have, in my opinion, the charm that show had. But they're very different franchises, so I don't know if you can really mix them or not, if that makes any sense.
Right, it does. And there were guest stars in this. We mentioned Elvira, and Bill Nye he's very self-deprecating in this, because Bill Nye, the opening scene, they smash the Mystery Machine. And I think they kind of draw on the stoner, how would you call it, postmodern take on Shaggy and Scooby, only they're not getting stoned on pot, they're getting stoned on candy.
Right. Sugar rushed.
Right. And they smash up the Mystery Machine, and Fred is like aghast at this, because Mystery Machine was always depicted as being Fred's van.
That was his ride. Yeah.
And so then Bill Nye gives them this Mystery Machine X, and he's kind of this holographic voice. And one of the things that cracked me up in it was he like got trick-or-treaters while they're in the middle of a chase. And clearly Bill Nye starts arguing with one of the trick-or-treaters about Aquaman. And he pops back in like 5 minutes later, and he's still ranting about Aquaman. And then 10 minutes later, he's still ranting about Aquaman.
Right. I was not a big fan of the Bill Nye inclusion. Not because I dislike Bill Nye. I have mixed feelings on the gentleman. I just, there are certain aspects of Scooby-Doo that I love and certain I don't. And like I said, it's much in the same vein of why I don't like the Heath Ledger Joker as much as I like Jack Nicholson. People get mad. It's like, I'm not ragging on his performance. He deserved that Oscar.
It was a different take on the character.
And that's not my favorite interpretation of that character. This take and the Bill Nye being involved and some of the silliness is the modern post 2000 take on Scooby-Doo that I am personally, as a huge fan of the franchise, not a fan of. I am a fan of the original stuff from when I was a kid, where it was a bunch of high schoolers who were helping solve mysteries with a tinge of supernatural to it.
Right.
And Scooby, yes, he was a bit human-like, and he could do almost talk in those, but he wasn't so overtly like intelligent like he got as later time went on.
Right. This Scooby-Doo in this movie, you could have a conversation with, and I'm not sure I'm keen on that.
Right, and it is what it is. I get it. And the idea that he like create, that just seemed out of place to me. It seemed more like his creation of a new Mystery Machine was more like akin to other Hanna-Barbera properties of the same time period. You would have seen that in, I don't want to say Josie and the Pussycats, but maybe Jabberjaws or some of those other that were obviously just...
Or even in Scooby-Doo, some of the stuff that happened in the 80s when it was like just Daphne, Shaggy, and Scooby, and somehow Daphne's able to fly helicopters and speed drive through chase scenes and such, you know.
Now, for those that are like a little bit darker Scooby, but still, I think, family friendly, my favorite take, more modern, was the direct to DVD movies, animated movies they were making in the late 90s, early 2000s, like Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island, Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost, which, okay, it has Tim Curry voicing the character of a Stephen King-like guy who winds up being the ancestor of a witch from Salem and is trying to bring about the devil on Earth.
I'm sold.
Thank you. There you go. Very dark or Zombie Island. The zombies are really zombies. The main bad guy is voiced by Adrian Barbeau, who is the owner of this southern this plantation in southern Louisiana, who actually is a cat person, and they're the real bad guys. And Mark Hamill is the voice of a crazy poacher / fisherman in the bayou down there. That should tell you right there, Mark Hamill.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So, and my introduction to Adrian Barbeau was Cannonball Run. I'll just leave it at that.
I think that might have been the first time I saw her, too. But, of course, as a horror guy, The Fog and being married to John Carpenter and Escape from New York and that kind of stuff. But it doesn't matter. She's awesome. But my point, that's more the modern, which to me, because it came out, those came out at the time when people who grew up with Scooby-Doo, like myself in the 70s and 80s, were now having kids of our own, and we had matured. So it was a darker, more mature version of Scooby, but it wasn't this silliness you had with this right here. You say it seemed to grow with its fan base, if that makes any sense.
Right. And when you say darker and more mature, it's not like it's R-rated or anything like that.
No,
it's just,
no.
Like you said, the zombies are real.
The zombies are real. The witches, ghost is real witches. That was the one thing that really got me about this, was more than anything, it seems like they had a lot of good ideas, but it was just me, or did it seem very disjointed at points? Like they had some...
I liked it, but I think I can see where you're coming from. I can see why somebody would notice that.
Yeah, because these, like on Zombie Island, Witch's Ghost, they feel like an hour and a half long movie. This felt like three or four 10-minute shorts that this director was more used to, kind of cobbled together trying to make an hour and a half long movie.
I will say, and I posted about this on my Facebook, but I think this may have had the longest car chase of any animated movie I've seen. Now, when I say,
heck yeah.
Now, when I say that, it's not like they're weaving in and out of lanes and car crashes and stuff like that, but they're just being pursued by the bad guys for the entire second act of the movie.
And to me, that was the perfect example when by it being disjointed. It was like they had an idea of where to start and they know how they wanted to end, and they didn't really know what to do in the middle. So they just made this big long car chase scene to kind of connect the two. Do you follow where I'm going with my analysis there?
Yes, yes. But I think in the end... Go ahead. But it sounds like in the end we both liked it. It sounds like I liked it a little bit more than you did.
Right.
But I never saw those DVD movies that you were talking about. I think I would like those better than I liked this.
I will say this. When they get to the end and they wrap around... not the very, very end. The very, very end, they went back off the deep end again with Elvira's hair, but it is what it is. But when we get to the conclusion of the mystery... and the bad guy is revealed, and it's that classic unmasking thing. That got back to being normal Scooby. And I was fine with that.
Right, because they were trying to go for that line of, I would have gotten away with it. And it's like, you're not going to say it? You're not going to say it?
Yeah, exactly. Another issue I did have with it, and this is where we did, by the way, the spoiler tag. I can't say I'm surprised, but when I explain why I had a problem with it, I think you'll understand whether you agree or disagree. We start out looking like the bad guy is going to be Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
When I say Scarecrow, I don't mean like a Scarecrow. We've seen that in Scooby-Doo animated before. I mean like Jonathan Crane Scarecrow, the Batman supervillain, which, by the way, was voiced by Dwight Schultz. Yes, the voice of Howling Mad Murdoch from the A-Team. So that's always a plus, right? So my issue is, you're telling me in this universe that a group of kids with no training and no gadgets or skills are able to take out a villain that Batman himself has a difficulty taking down. Doesn't speak very well for Batman now, does it?
Okay, I see where you're coming from. And not only that, it was Shaggy and Scooby throwing candy at him.
Right. I can't be saying I'm surprised that they went that route, because if you have seen the aforementioned Scoob, I think it's pretty obvious that in the Warner Brothers animation world, which was the producer of both this and Scoob, they are going for a shared universe, which we've talked about, could be good or bad, but because of the success of Marvel... that's kind of where everybody's going in Hollywood right now. If you watch Scoob, they bring in other Hanna-Barbera properties like Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt, like Captain Caveman. It kind of felt like they were trying to do the same thing with the inclusion of a Batman supervillain here. Did you get that vibe too?
Yeah, because you really, if they're going to be mentioning Batman villains, then it's only a matter of time before they have to bring in Batman himself.
Right. Which, by the way, they've crossed those streams before. We've talked about that.
Yeah, at least twice.
Yeah, so I'm not that upset if they do. I'm just saying it was a little bit of a letdown that granted, I might be looking through my own personal biases here. Scarecrow's like one of my favorite Batman villains. He's right up there with Joker and Ra's al Ghul for me, personally. Probably number two or number three after Joker. And so maybe it's my personal bias there, but I just should have made him a little more difficult for the kids to catch. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Right. I do think Dwight Schultz did a great job voicing the character, though.
Oh, yeah. Can you go wrong? That's Murdoch, man.
Exactly. Yeah. It's Barclay from Star Trek.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. It's A-Team, dude. Come on. So I would recommend it for kids. I don't know how many hardcore adult fans like us that grew up loving Scooby-Doo are going to like it. But I think some Scooby-Doo is better than none at all. I will also say this. One more detractor. Not that I disliked the monsters in this. They're essentially jack-o'-lanterns that float with these tentacles, which almost had like a Lovecraftian feel to it. But there was a similar gimmick and a bad guy named Jack O'Lantern in the old Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. I wonder if this director like was just bereft of ideas, and so he went with something he'd already done before. But the main Jacqueline, the big one that walked on all fours, looked a lot like one they had in that episode of Grim Adventures. So I wonder, it's one of the least impressive Scooby-Doo villains I've ever seen. But I grew up on the old show where the kooky space kook and the creeper and the ghosts of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and these really, really cool bad guys that they had in the old show, this any close to them. 10,000 volt ghosts, snow ghosts. You remember all the old ones. Tiki Tia. Yeah, those were all great, great bad guys and scared the crap out of me when I was like 7, 8 years old. I don't see the 7 or 8 year old crazy train seeing those jack-o'-lanterns, I've been like, so.
Well, I think we can both sum it up, or I think we can agree on this, that it might be a suitable entry if you're going to have a Halloween party with kids, or, you know, and you want something that both adults and kids can watch. It probably fits for that, right?
Exactly. Start with this. Your kids are a little older, preteens, 9, 10, 11, 12. Try to find you a copy of Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost or Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island. Then pop that in. That's the way to go. And then in the night if you have HBO Max, the over-the-top streaming service, they have all the old Scooby-Doo Where Are You episodes on. You might want to finish with a couple of those. Just call it a Scooby-Doo night and be done with it.
All right, and that's going to wrap up this edition of Geekville Radio. Thank you, folks, for listening. We are at geekvilleradio.com. We are available on all the major podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, you name it. And if you need to contact us, we can be found on social media at Geekville Radio, both on Facebook and Twitter. And Train, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, how can they get a hold of you?
Always available on Twitter at crazytrain_JB. I got a couple more days left in our 31 days of lesser known horror movie trailers. We will be dropping a podcast, I believe, on Halloween Day is what we're shooting for, that will kind of review all those. So keep checking that out. Me and Seth have both been pretty busy putting up memes and stuff on there as well. Some humorous, some scary, some serious. Check that out on the Examining the Dead Facebook page. Seth's going to put you a link to my Spotify Halloween playlist, which he puts up with everyone this time of year. Check it out if you need a little soundtrack to get you in the mood. And we're looking forward to Halloween. It's only a couple days away, and it's my favorite time of the year. This is 2020. If there's a better year for Halloween, I don't know what it is. Do you?
Well, it would be nice to like actually have a Halloween party, but
it is what it is. Well, everybody's wearing masks. What are you worried about? Just social distance.
All right. Thank you. Thanks again, folks, for listening, and we'll talk to you folks again next time.
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.